Recording.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to those who are in person, those who are on Zoom. I'll say hello. We've got Paul and Stuart over here who are joining for Gemara tonight. And we're joined on our computer, it seems, with Toby, Gloria, Henry, Mayor, Erwin, and Dawn, I believe. Is that Dawn? Okay, very good. So we find ourselves on Tes Amud Beis 9b on the bottom. In reality, we actually are at the top of 10a, but beginning of 10a, the beginning of Yud Amud Aleph is the Gemara, which goes on the Mishnah. So we're going to review the Mishnah from last time, particularly the last line in the Mishnah, and then we will proceed with the new Gemara tonight. Now, the Gemara we're going to learn tonight actually is a very fundamentally important Gemara because depending on how you conclude, answers a number of questions about, A, can I bring karbanos today? Can I bring offerings? And if I can I do it at the Temple Mount? Can I do it in my backyard? It answers another question about Shemitah nowadays. Do we have to observe Shemitah? Do we observe it biblically? Do we observe it rabbinically? And you'll see exactly what I mean. The fundamental question we're dealing with is that we know that when the Beis HaMikdash stood, we know that there was sanctity. But the question is, once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and we were sent to exile, did that sanctity get whisked away with it? That's the question here. So let's review the Mishnah. And the last line of the Mishnah will explain to us what we need to know. The Mishnah on the bottom of Tes Amud Beis, the bottom of 9b, goes as follows. Ein bein shilo liyerushalayim, sheba shilo ochlev kachun kalim, u'maiser sheni b'chol haroeh, u'yerushalayim lifnim min hachoma. So there's not a lot of difference between the tabernacle, the Mishkan, when it stood in Shiloh, and later the first temple when it was erected. Save for a few distinctions. So for instance, in Shiloh, you can eat, there's basically 2 degrees of sacrifices, what's called kachim kalim, lighter forms of, kal is light, lesser degree of sanctity, and then there was the higher level, kachim kachim, which were like sin offerings. Those have a higher level of sanctity. And so back in the days of the Mishkan, those with lower sanctity, in times of the Mishkan, as long as you can see the tabernacle, you can eat it. And back in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, as long as you are within Yerushalayim, you can eat it. As well as Ma'aser Shem. And both in the Mishkan and in the Beis HaMikdash, you would have to eat Kachi Kach, a higher degree of offerings. That would have to be eaten inside the sanctum. Not necessarily inside the heichal, inside the building, inside the courtyard, or the general area of the Beis HaMikdash, that's called Lifnim and Aklayim, because the curtains were used for the Mishkan, and then walls were erected during the Beis HaMikdash. All that was last time, of course, remember it if you can, but this line is what we need to know for tonight. Kedushas Shiloh Yesh Achra Heter. So, before the temple was erected, and before, during certain times of history, when the Mishkan wasn't well established, one was allowed to have a bama. We discussed this in the last Mishnah. A bama, kitana, is a private altar. So the way I like to liken it today is, right, you have a good shalom here. This is like our mikdash ma'at, our mini beis hamikdash. And then you have the backyard minyanim, which are like the bamas. So the rule is when the beis hamikdash is around, you're not supposed to have the bamas. So the Kedusha Shiloh, I know I'm preaching to the choir here. Kedusha Shiloh Yish Achreha Heter. After the fall of the Mishkan and Shiloh, they reverted to using Bamos again because, well, okay, great. There's no other place to bring your Karbanos. But Kedusha Yerushalayim, but after the fall of the temple in Jerusalem, Ein Achreha Heter, one was not allowed to rebuild their bamos, which leads one to assume, okay, if I can't, right, let's bring it to its logical conclusion. When am I allowed to use a bama? When there's no Beis HaMikdash. And when am I not allowed to use a bama? When there is a Beis HaMikdash. So let me ask you a question. If we're not allowed to use bamos today, what's the logical conclusion? Maybe I should be able to bring Carbonos, perhaps on the Temple Mount today, where the temple once stood. And if I can't bring it into the base of Mikdash today, then why can't I build a Bama? Right? So
I have another question just before you go ahead. Yeah. Where were the tablets after the destruction of the Shiloh Tabernacle?
Well, tablets were always inside the Ark. So the Ark was stolen by the Plishtim temporarily. And then we have the whole story of the cows and how they came back. So it was eventually recovered. But then the Aron was...
And where did they keep it until when there was no tabernacle and there was no Beis HaMikdash?
Right. So a lot of the important items in the Beis HaMikdash were hidden when they were afraid that they were going to be captured by the...
No. That's already what there was a Beis HaMikdash. But I'm saying after Shiloh... Before there was any construction.
Before David HaMelech brought the Aron to Jerusalem, to up to Yerushalayim, which is like Perek, I don't know, Vav or Zion of Shmuel Aleph, then it was, I forgot the name of the place, but it was in a different city, in some person's house or something.
All right.
Why wouldn't that be the place where you would bring your sacrifices? I mean, I would think that at least to be by the tablets.
Interesting. I mean, look, you know, we have to, who's attending Mark Waxwell's Sefer Shmuel Shiur? You guys should know the answers to this. Okay. Very good. But So Amar Rav Yitzchak, we're going to learn a very important concept in just a moment. So I heard that the family, Beis Chonav, they would bring karbanos after the fall of the first temple. So one assumption is we're assuming that this family that brought karbanos after the fall of the temple, this wasn't a pagan temple. What they were doing was chedasu chedin. It was halachically appropriate. Ukasavar kedusha rishona. This is the important line here. Kedusha rishona kitchalishaita. When we sanctified the place of the first temple, it was at the moment that the temple stood. However, below kitchalas and lavo, but once the temple was destroyed, the kedusha dissipated along with it. Dichsiv. This is the pasuk that talks about bamos. When you do not have a mishkan, when you do not have a Beis HaMikdash, then you're able to set up your private bamos. Menucha zo shilo, a resting place refers to a temporary resting place. That refers to when the mishkan was in Shiloh. Nachla zo Yerushalayim, a heritage refers to Jerusalem, which is where things are supposed to be. So we see makish nachla lemenucha. The fact that the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash are mentioned together next or juxtaposed in the same verse, Ma Menucha Yishachara Heter, they share the same laws. Just as the Mishkan, after it was removed, you're allowed to even walk where it was. There's no Kedusha anymore. Af Nachla Yishachara Heter, so too after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, also. There's no longer any residual kedusha. You'd be allowed to go ahead and build your own bamos, and hence that's what this family did.
There's no kedusha. Why is there an issue now?
Very good. So Paul asked the question, which I'm sure may have been bothering a number of you, perhaps. So thank you for bringing this up. Which is what I mean. But why nowadays are we making such a big deal about the Beis HaMikdash? I mean, about the Temple Mount, about going to Mikvah beforehand and making sure I go in the right places. I don't go where, you know, I wouldn't be allowed to go. So the reason is as follows. This is the main reason, I believe. There's the first temple, there's the second temple. Our Gemara, I think, primarily is well, actually, it's Machlokas what it's talking about. But this is the easiest way to understand it. The Rambam says that even if you hold that the Kedusha, the sanctity dissipated when the temple was destroyed, that refers to the first temple, not to the second temple. After destruction of the second temple, the Kedusha remained intact. Now, you'll ask me, that seems arbitrary. You know, it should work. If it dissipated after the first one, it should dissipate after the second. If it didn't dissipate after the first one, why are we distinguishing? So Rabbi Mirsky has a nice essay where he, I believe, actually cites for Soloveitchik. And he doesn't use it this way, but I'll bring it in now because we need no Hilchos Pesach. When you kasher your, oh my gosh, this is Sunday night. We have to do it. Okay. At Shul, Sunday night and Tuesday night this coming week, we're doing kashering. So if I have a pot that I boiled non-kosher soup in it, or a chametz stick of soup, and I want to use it for Pesach, so the way the taste got absorbed, kibolo, kachpoto, that's how you extract the forbidden taste. So since through hot water it entered, with hot water we extract, it seems logical. So Salavichik said, how did we conquer the Israel the first time around? Through war, through conquest. So kibolo kachpoto. The same way we acquired land was through conquest. So when we were conquered militarily and taken out, then our hold on the land was lost as well. Since that's how we initially sanctified. However, since the second time, the Olei Bavel, those who came up from Babylonia, resettled the land not through war, but through just living and settling in the land, that's not something that military conquest would remove. And since the second base of Mikdash was, I guess you could say, peacefully made, war would not outdo the peace, and thus the Kedusha of the second base of Mikdash remains intact nowadays. That was Rav Soloveitchik's approach. It's a little bit of a drush. You know, it's a nice shop. It's a nice Shabbos morning sermon, as Rav Soloveitchik would say. But anyway, that's what we hold. So maybe just the first base of Mikdash, there's no Kedusha afterwards. The second one, there is. And we can also talk about what we mean by Kedusha. Maybe there's, you know, different kinds of Kedusha. So that's important as well. But excellent question. So let's just pick up where we left off here. Where we left off is that Rav Yitzchak, we're going to point out in a moment, said something contradictory to our Mishnah. Now, the issue is, Rav Yitzchak is an Amora. And Amora comes generations after the Tanaim, who are the authors of the Mishnah. And anyone who's a lawyer here, you know, precedent is important, right? Well, you're lawyers. Or you just know. I mean, look, we know what precedent is, right? Precedent is important. You can't, if the Tanaim say something, an Amora is not allowed to overrule a Tana. So we're going to have to find support for Rav Yitzchak. But you can see in my time, so what happened? Yitzchak, did you really teach this? Something contradictory to the Mishnah? The Mishnah said there is Kedusha afterwards, La Sidlavo. Rav Yitzchak says there is no Kedusha, La Sidlavo. You could go ahead and basically bring sacrifices on your bumos if you like. Amarlehulo, I didn't say this. Amarava, Halokim. Amra, that's an exclamation, right? It's like in the name of God or by God, you said that. Ugamirna lamine. In fact, I learned it from you. It's like I heard it straight from your mouth that you said this law. So what happened? Yes, Rav Yitzchak did teach this, but he took back his words. Right, he retracted. My time at Kahadar, so why did he retract? Mishum Kasha the Ramari, because Ramari cited our Mishnah as well as another one that contradicted his ruling. Demosiv Rav Mari, Kedusha Shilo, he's quoting our Mishnah. Kedusha Shilo Yishachra Heter, Kedusha Tishalayim Inachra Heter. It says explicitly, after Shilo, there's no Kedusha. I remember, I think I shared this last week when I was in Eretz Yisrael, when I was learning in Shalavim. And we went to where they believe the Makom HaMishkan, where the Mishkan used to stand. We're standing on it. Like, by the way, you're standing where we believe the Mishkan was archaeologically. And we're like, oh, do we have to get off this? Like, no, because it says right here in the Mishkan that after the Mishkan was gone, there's no residual Kedusha. It's like any other land. It's temporary. But Yerushalayim, where the Beit HaMikdash was, that is eternal. So that's a question, because Rav Yitzchak says it's not eternal. Our Mishnah says it is eternal. The Otnan, furthermore, if you don't want to take our Mishnah's word for it, take the following Mishnah, which is, let's see, Nzvachim. Mishabo Yerushalayim, when they came to Yerushalayim, Nesru HaBamos, they forbade any use of Bamos, Lohaylam Od Heter, Bihaisal and Nachla. So they did, there was no Heter after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because it became a Nachla, it became our heritage. And so once the Beis HaMikdash was established for all future generations, it has Kedusha, and therefore you cannot build your own private Mizbeach. So once Rav Yitzchak was enlightened and he noticed that his opinion was contradicted by a Mishnah, so he retracted and he said, you know what? Kedusha Rishona, Kitsha L'Shaita, U Kitsha L'Asilavo. The Kedusha, the Beis HaMikdash, lasts today as well. And which, of course, Paul, as you pointed out, That's why we're very concerned about walking on the Temple Mount area. Now, some people like to believe that Rav Yitzchak didn't retract, and we're going to have to find Tanaitic support for Rav Yitzchak. So it's not so simple. Until this point, we think it's a Mishnah versus an Amora. So the Mishnah says the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash lasts even today. Okay, that's actually subject to a dispute amongst Tanayim, and we'll demonstrate that momentarily. We're going to give one attempt at demonstrating that's Machlokas. Then we're going to reject it. We'll have a second attempt that we will accept, and that'll basically be the conclusion of the Gemara. So that's just the bird's eye view of what to expect. Tanoihi. So it's actually a Machlokas Tanoi. It's actually very warm in here. I apologize. Tanoihi. The Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer, Shemati Kishal Yubona Behechal, right? Rabbi Eliezer reports, I heard when they were building the Hechal, which is that's the sanctum of the Beis HaMikdash, Osin Klaim LeHechal, Klaim LaAzara. So they made Klaim for the Hechal, they made curtains for the Hechal, for the sanctum, and they made also for the courtyard area. El Sheba Hechal, Bonu Mechutsu Bazara, Bonu Mefnim, when they made for the Hechal, they built from the outside. When he made for the courtyard, they built from the inside. Now, what's important, what the Gemara is going to explain at the end, is that we assume that the act of putting curtains up temporarily before there were walls was because they wanted to rededicate, they wanted to re-sanctify the grounds of the Beis HaMikdash once they came back up to build the second one. So, you know, it takes time, there's the shipping supplies, supply lines aren't good, you have to get the right building material, it takes time. So they rededicated it by putting curtains up in the meantime, which implies that the initial Kedusha had already dissipated, and they had to rededicate and re-sanctify it on their own, which supports Rav Yitzchak's opinion that it was not an eternal Kedusha, and that's why they had to re-sanctify when they came back up the second time. Amar Yeshua, however, Rabbi Yeshua reports differently. Shemati Shemakriven, Apa Pisha Ein Bayis. I heard that my teaching I received was that we could bring, he actually says explicitly, this is perfect. Shemakriven, Apa Pisha Ein Bayis, Ochlin, Kachin, Ochlin, Kachin, Kachin, Apa Pisha Ein Klein. So one can bring karbanos even when there is no Beis HaMikdash. One can eat kachin, the higher level of karbanos, even when there are no curtains, so there's no defined border to where you can eat the kachin. In terms of kachin kalim, umayser sheni, lower forms of kedusha that only have to be eaten inside Yerushalayim, they don't need to be eaten dafka in the Beis HaMikdash, ava b'yishin choma, even though there's no defined wall to Yerushalayim, because, and this is fits with the opinion of our Mishnah, that the Kiddusha of both the Beis HaMikdash and Yerushalayim are eternal, and he actually says it right here, black on white, that therefore one should be able to bring karbanos nowadays, because if you actually say that the Kiddusha is eternal to the degree that you're not allowed to have your own private mizbeach, then it logically follows that I should be able to bring karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, and I should be able to eat kachim kalam, meiser sheni, inside the walls of Yerushalayim. Remember that, didn't? Those who were with us back in the Makos day, perhaps one of our most traumatic sugyos that we did, is when we're talking about someone's escaping and he's on a tree and the tree's base is inside the wall, but the leaves go outside. Right, Toby, I know, I see. I remember we were all traumatized. Even as I was explaining the Gemara, my head was spinning. So that one traumatizes me every single time I learn Makos. But you'll remember in that sugya, it wasn't important just for determining the borders of an ir miklat, but it was important also for determining the walls of Yerushalayim. I have to eat meiser sheni, and there's a tree, and I'm on the tree, and the branches are outside the wall, but the base is inside the wall. I'm on the base, I'm on the tree. So basically, you have to eat inside the walls of Yerushalayim. So even though they might not exist today, the Kiddusha is eternal, Rabbi Yeshua says. Mechlal, so since Rabbi Yeshua seems to be disagreeing with Rabbi Eliezer, we can infer the Rabbi Eliezer Savar, lo kitchel asanavo, The Rabbi Eliezer says the Kedusha is not eternal, and hence that's why they had to set up the curtains to rededicate the site of the Beis HaMikdash and to re-imbue it with sanctity. So there is a suggestion in the Gemara that we see two opinions of Tanaim. One says there's eternal Kedusha. One says there's not eternal Kedusha. Wonderful. So we can close up shop. However, we reject this. Amrali Rabbi Ravashi, Imai, Dilma Dukuli Alma Kedusha Rishon Kedusha Shaita Kedusha Lavo. Maybe everybody holds that the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash is eternal. So what do I make of Rabbi Eliezer, who seems to say that it's not eternal? That's why they needed to rededicate it. Umar, my Dishmiele Kamar, Umar, my Dishmiele Kamar. They weren't Dafka, he wasn't trying to Dafka make a halachic statement. He was just reporting what he saw back in the day. He's like, oh, I remember back in the day before they had walls, they temporarily put up curtains, but not necessarily for a halachic reason. The Chitema claimed that Rabbi Eliezer Lamaliso knew. Why did they put the curtains up yet then? What was the point of it? The answer is litzniusa ba'alma. Because, well, you know, if you don't have walls, we need to kind of put separate spaces for the Kohanim, a separate space for where the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, is supposed to be. We can't just have everything out in the open. So in the meantime, we'll put curtains up. But it's not that the curtains were rededicating the Beis HaMikdash. It was already imbued with sanctity at an earlier time. So we can't look at this Mishnah here and assume that there's actually a Machlokes Tanaim. We're still left with the assumption that everyone holds that the Kedusha is eternal, just like our Mishnah, which leads us to ask, where's Rabbi Yitzchak getting his information from that he holds that the Kedusha is not eternal? Which leads us to our second and final attempt to demonstrate that this is actually subject to Machlokes Tanaim, whether the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, of the Beis HaMikdash, is eternal. I know I keep using Beis HaMikdash, Yerushalayim, interchangeably. There is an assumption we've shown him that they do go hand in hand. And we're going to bring in a third factor, which is the general category of walled cities we're going to talk about. Now, a little bit about walled cities. What's the halakhic significance of a walled city? Now, we know from learning Megillah, we actually talked about both meanings previously, but we know back from Purim, I know Purim feels like so long ago, that on the 14th and the 15th are the 2 days that someone can read. So if someone is residing in a walled city from the times of Yoshua's conquest, so then they read the Megillah on the 15th of Adar. But that's just a rule for Purim. But the more general rule for what's significant about a walled city is if I buy a house from you, right, Paul, I buy your house, and you live inside a walled city from the times of Yoshua, so you have up to a year to buy that back from me. And if you do not, it is mine permanently, even if Yovel, even if the Jubilee year comes, it is mine. That is a special rule for walled cities only. So there's a Mishnah, I believe in Erechin, if I'm not mistaken, that, yeah, is it Erechin? So I'll get correct, or Idios? Idios. Okay, thank you. So that, I have to like look back to the source of shots, but you probably have the reference right there. That's helpful. So that only gives us a few of the names. And we're led to believe that there's actually more walled cities than are named in that Mishnah. So that's where we pick up here. This is where the Machlokes Tanaim comes in. El Kihani Tanaim. Rather, this is the Machlokes Tanaim about whether the Kedusha is eternal or not. The Tanya. I'm Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi. Lama manu chachamim es ilu, sheng sha'alu b'nei agola matzus ilu kitchum. So why did chachamim list these names of cities? Well, these cities were the ones that they found when they came up from Galus and they re-sanctified it. Avla rishonos butlu misha butla aretz. But everything else, once we were kicked out of Eretz Yisrael, we were exiled, their Kedusha dissipated along with them. So we see here from the fact, again, that they had to re-sanctify, rededicate, re-establish these cities as walled cities. We see from there That means their Kedusha had initially dissipated, thus necessitating the re-sanctification or the rededication, if you will. Or a minhu, however, Rabbi Yishmael, excuse me, I've got so much quiet in here, very nice. Rabbi Yishmael, the old kids are gone now. Rabbi Yishmael, ben Rav Yossi, contradicts himself, seemingly. Or a minhu, Amar Yishmael, ben Rav Yossi, did he able bad how you? Are these the only, again, same question, are these the only walled cities from the times of Yeshua? V'lokvar nemar, shishim ir kochevel Argo. There were 60 cities to the region of Argo. Uksiv ko eila arim b'tzuris choma gavoa. And we're told that 60 of these cities were all fortified cities with tall walls. So why doesn't the Mishnah list all these cities then? Elam amanu kachamas eilu. Because when it came from the Golas, they rededicated them. Now here, rededicate doesn't mean re-sanctify them. Rather, returning to page, Hashka, but we taught that we do not need to rededicate them. Rather, what happened? They found these cities and they counted the ones that they could identify. But they did not need to rededicate them. Anything that had a status of walled city earlier, when the Jews were first in charge of Eretz Yisrael, they didn't need to be reestablished. So rather, Igle Milsa, we're just trying to discover what was previously established as a walled city. So, Lo Elabovad, a Kulshim Talalach Masuris Bidechim, Abba Sefesh, Mekavetz, Homi Mosei Shabbat. So any city that we have a Mesorah, that we have a tradition, was a walled city from the times of Yeshua ben Nun. So then it is a walled city for all halachic intents and purposes. Which leads to an interesting question, right, Henry? I think you brought up about Beit Shemesh, perhaps others did previously. So what happens when it's interesting, it says if we have a Mesorah. What if archaeology teaches us that something's a walled city? So what do we make of that? Okay. So but what's the point of all this? The point of all this is, Kash of the Rabbi Shmuel, the Rabbi Shmuel. We have a steer mine obey. We have an internal contradiction within one person. On one hand, Rabbi Shmuel first said that they needed to re-sanctify all the cities because the Kedusha dissipated. But here, in the second account of Rabbi Shmuel ben Rav Yossi, he says, no, they just needed to identify what was eternally designated as a walled city. So I don't get it. Does the Kedusha stick with us or does it dissipate once we're kicked out? What do we make of this? He himself is contradictory. So here's an easy answer for you. Tri Tanoi Aliba de Rabbi Shmuel and Rav Yossi. There were two accounts of what Rabbi Shmuel and Rav Yossi said. I remember one time, you know, this is what happens. I remember, not to say I'm anywhere near a Rabbi Yossi or Rabbi Shmuel, but I remember one time when I was an intern in Young Israel Plainview, I gave a sermon and I talked about the importance, I don't remember what it was, something about integrity or honesty or whatever it was. And that, so then what happened was afterwards, someone came over and he's like, yeah, you know, something about Trump. And then so I was like, yeah, Hillary and her emails. Another person said, so it was like amazing. I said like one thing and one person came over and thought I was like criticizing Hillary Clinton. That person thought I was criticizing Donald Trump. So, you know, I'll have the Alfie Adelos, you know, one person could get up there and give a shiur and two people could walk away with opposite interpretations of it. So apparently there were opposite interpretations of what Rabbi Shmuel said. So one way to resolve it, as we said, is two different accounts of what he said. Alternatively, rather, this is one of these accounts was not Rabbi Yishmael ben Rav Yossi, but Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Yossi. The Tanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Yossi, Omer, Asher lo choma, afish elo ashav, v'haya lo kodem lefein. Even though there's no wool right now, he holds if there was a wool previously, so then it's considered a walled city for all time. Now notice, by the way, this opinion has nothing to do with the Kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash. It seemingly has nothing to do with the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. This is just a general rule, a specific rule in the rules of Arei Choma, the rules of identifying walled cities. Be it as it may, what did we accomplish? The first opinion of Rabbi Shmuel still tells us that the Kiddusha Rishona does dissipate, and that's why it necessitated rededication. So the point is, we now have a Tana who Rav Yitzchak can hang his hat on. So basically, what we conclude with at the end of the day is a Machlokas Tanaim, that one opinion, which is the majority opinion seemingly of our Mishnah, other Mishnayos, other Tanaim, say Kiddusha Rishona Kitchel Shaita Ula Asad Lavo, that there is an eternal Kiddusha, and hence walking on the Temple Mount, Karbanos, Shemitah, all these different ramifications. This minority opinion that's not the Asid Lavo. Now, again, even if it's not the Asid Lavo, are we talking about just the first base of Mikdash? Maybe we would agree, we would concede that the second base of Mikdash does give eternal Kiddusha. Okay. End of the Gemara. I'll take a deep breath. Okay. Any questions? I have one idea I wanted to share. It's not on the page. But any questions before we get to that? Yes. Yes, Paul. I'll repeat his questions.
I'm sorry. What are the logistics of giving sacrifices outside of Beit HaMikdash? Do they need Kohanim? Could you do it on your own? Your family, Bama?
Right. So Paul asked, what would be the logistics if I had a Bama of bringing my own sacrifices, right? So we touched on this a little bit in a previous year. If you glance back at Testament Base on 9b, the Mishnah, the second to last Mishnah on the page, it talked about the distinction between a Bama Katana and a Bama Gedola. So Bama Katana is what we just call a Bama, a minor Bama. For a minor Bama, we said that anything that you dedicate out of the goodness of your heart, that's Nidar V'Nidav, Kara Bibama, that you can bring. But as far as obligatory sacrifices, for sinning, for Karban Pesach, anything that's obligatory, you wouldn't be able to. So if you want to just like sponsor a kiddush in your backyard, you shouldn't shecht it on Shabbos because multiple Yisurim that would be done with that. But that's what you could do. So actually, it's very limited what you can do on your own private Bama. So you would, and so that's why you wouldn't necessitate a Kohen and all those other requirements, because these are very, very small subsects. What was that?
Optional.
Yeah, these are optional sacrifices. I don't believe it would require a Kohen, is my understanding. But getting to the question of Karbanos nowadays, the question is, okay, we just established the majority opinion is that it's Kiddusha Rishonos L'Shaita Ula Asid Lava. So if there's eternal Kiddusha today from the Beis HaMikdash, can I bring a carbon today? So very quickly, let me blitz through a number of opinions with you. One opinion is the Kehilas Yaakov, this is the Stipler. So this is a recent authority, 20th century we're talking here, who quotes the Sefer HaKinah. He thinks that nowadays there's a Rishus. You're not obligated to bring carbonos, but you can voluntarily bring karbanos. What do you mean by rishus? Rishus is something that you could volunteer to do. We won't get too much into the lumbus of that right now. The second talk about bring karbanos el pesach o hamoed, to the entrance of the tent of the meeting place. So since we don't have the, what would be the equivalent of the old Moed at the Beis HaMikdash today? We don't have a temple standing. We wouldn't be obligated to bring Karbanos. But he actually says you could bring it as a Dvar Rishus. You could voluntarily bring it. Now, you should note the Kehilas Yaakov is not a halach lamais. It's not a practical halacha sefer. It's a sefer that comments on the Gemara and like gets into the lumbus. I'm not sure if that was his practical ruling. He was very Haredi. I just don't think the Temple Mount was part of his agenda, but that's what he writes. The Binyan Tzion says, he quotes the pasuk in Vayikras, I'm not going to want to, I don't want to smell any of your Reach Nichoch, any of the good scent that comes from your Karbanos when you are exiled. So we see that the purpose of the Karbanos is to bring, part of it is to bring a Reach Nichoach LaHashem, to bring this nice scent up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God does not desire it when we are in Golos. He says, and this is an interesting point. So, okay, but you know, in our generation, the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. God's saying, you wicked generation, when you're sent into exile, I don't want to have any of the sense from your karmanos. Okay, but us, you know, sitting here learning Gemara today, what did we do wrong? Ah, so it's the classic teaching from Chazal, Sha'ashul Charvan Beis Abayis B'Doreinu, even though the Beit HaMikdash wasn't destroyed in our generation, Mikol Makom Gam Al Dor Zed Nemar Blo Ariyach, because we're taught by Chazal that for every generation, the Beis HaMikdash isn't destroyed. We apparently, if we were living during that those times, it would have been destroyed in our generation as well. So God doesn't want our karbanos today either, according to the Binyan Siyam. I'll end with one last interesting idea. So there's the opinion of the Netziv. The Netziv says yes, but he adds one little distinction. When it comes to the Korban Pesach, right? The Pesach comes, perfect. The Korban Pesach, there's no mentioning of a Reach Nichoach. I have to check the Psukim, right? We have some Bali Kriyan. Henry, you're a Bali Kori, right? Do you recall any mentioning of a Reach Nichoach in regards to the Korban Pesach? Okay, good. The Netziv says there isn't. So I think it's before, but I figured I could ask the Bal Kore if we have one on us. So unlike all other karbanos, the Korban Pesach, he says, could be brought nowadays. So interestingly, I think there's some movements who like to bring, you look at, I forgot what it's called, this organization that
Shomronim.
Shomronim.
They don't bring it to Yerushalayim.
Right. Well, Shomronim are
but they have their own altars for it where they live on Har Gerizim.
Right, right. Very good. Very good. I mean, like, you know, it's very fascinating. I think
YU's there, actually. A documentary it's amazing. On it.
Yeah, I think YU's going to have has a documentary coming out on the Shomronim, how they have their own version of the Torah has variations.
The original is what they think they have.
Everyone thinks they have the original.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're like, you know, they don't believe in the oral law. That's, you know, they're a fundamentalist.
Arguably, we're fundamentalists also, just in different ways.
No. but Rabbi, I have a question. I mean, even if you accept that isn't the problem us? The problem being that, you know, even if supposedly Yerushalayim is still sanctified and the area of the Temple Mount is still sanctified, and so it's capable of accepting karbonos. But are we capable to bring them? Like, weren't there all kinds of requirements? You had to be pure, you had to be this, you had to be that. So yeah. Isn't that the real problem, that we can't establish anybody who's qualified to bring a karbon?
Interesting. I mean, definitely right. You have to go to mikvah. You have to make sure that you are tahor before going up. You're saying maybe there's like complications about being tamei mace and how we don't have a paraduma today. That could be an important factor as well. But I think it's called Mechon HaMikdash, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's the organization where they will actually, I think, try to go to Temple Mount and bring a Korban Pesach, if I'm not mistaken.
These are from.
It would not be a good time for them to
These are very, you know, ideologically, very politically right wing, but like, you know, very passionate about bringing back the Beis HaMikdash. Like, I think we should all be passionate about bringing back the Beis HaMikdash. Question is what methods we use, but I think, you know, the heart is definitely in the right place. The Kesem Mishnah writes, Shemash Ezra Ki Shal Atzlava Shema Bismana Chorban Yinasim Lo Rishis Sahakra. So the Kesem Mishnah on the Rama actually writes, yeah, that which Ezra came along and rededicated the Beis HaMikdash, re-sanctified the second Beis HaMikdash, that's also level, and that gives us authority to bring karbanos. There are many achronim, though, who deny this, and it's a little bit beyond the scope of what I have in front of me right now to share. But basically, just to note that this principle is important for understanding if and how karbanos can be brought today. It's also important for Shemitah. Are the rules of the seventh year right now in Shemitah, are they applicable on a deraisa, on a biblical or rabbinical level? So if you say that the kiddusha after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the second one even, is lo la'asid lavo, is not existent today, so then perhaps one could argue Shemitah doesn't apply today, at least on a biblical level. And so that's an important idea to take into the sugya when we're discussing the laws of Shemitah and different ways that farmers might try to circumvent some of the difficulties that might work on a rabbinical level. But if we were to understand it's a biblically mandated today, then we could run into all sorts of harder complications. Thankfully, there's other factors at play about having rove of the Jewish people, but that's a shear for another time. Okay, shkoach, everyone. Thank you guys for joining.
Rabbi, you want to remind everybody about the scheduling for the next few weeks?
Ah, thank you, Toby. Yes. Next week, since next Thursday, hopefully at the time of the shiur, we'll be doing Bedikas Chametz. The shiur will actually be the night before, Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock. So just 24 hours earlier. That's all.
And then during Pesach, you're also doing it.
That is my plan. I think Thursday night during Pesach should be good, God willing.
Thursday night is
Erev Yontif.
So you're going to do
Wednesday. You're right.
The next 2 weeks are Wednesdays.
Next 2 weeks are Wednesdays. Okay. Shkoyach. All right. Have a good Shabbos, everyone.
Thank you.
Shabbos. Take care. Shabbos.